Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast. Here to talk all things Arsenal is your host, Matthew Wade.
Hello again, listeners, and welcome to another Daily Canon Weekly Podcast. This is the 301st Daily Canon Weekly Podcast, so we've been talking at you for some time now. But thankfully, you'd be pleased to hear that it's not just me talking at you, because that would be interminable. We have the wonderful Anita Sembol. How are you, Anita?
Hello, Matthew. A bit tired, but excited for the new season. It snuck up on me, I have to say. Just thinking like, oh, it's not now 3 or 4 days till the first match kicks off. But yeah, I'm getting a bit excited.
Well, I mean, you know that the new season's nearly upon us because, you know, the Anita graphics are are in place. And so it's like, okay, it's okay, guys. We're ready. It's fine.
Yeah, because, you know, life happened and everything in life that happened, it was just, didn't have time to do the fixtures, printables, but managed to get a few hours during the weekend, and they are available on the Daily Canon website, free to download, as always, and print and use, and hopefully happy results until the end of the season. I mean, last few seasons have been a pain. I lost interest along the way. I'm sure many did as well.
Well, you can tell how bad it is because you're normally like the uber positive one. And I have to admit, over the course of last season, I was like, wow, I'm having to try and make Anita feel happy. This is shit's got real.
Well, I'll be honest. I said that I am excited because, you know, it's a new season. It's a new season feeling and everything around it, and fans are being back and all that, and back to the, you know, routine, especially since we don't have European football. So there won't be as many Sunday matches as we had previous seasons. So back to the Saturday schedule, perhaps that's the exciting part. But I mean, I'll have to be honest, and the squad part and the managing part and all of that, the preseason results aside and everything, it's not like something that it's making me very, very hopeful for the new season. But still, you know, I'm here to be proven wrong and still be watching every single match I can.
Well, of course, we all know my fountain and well of hope is particularly deep running, and I'm still optimistic. Obviously, that's on the proviso that there is at least one or two more arrivals between now and whenever we're not allowed to buy players anymore. And you know, to as you say, the preseason has been far from convincing. Of course, anyone that's watched football for any length of time knows that Arsenal having a great preseason doesn't mean shit.
Yeah.
All those preseasons where we'd go and play in Austria or whatever and shit all over everyone, even with all good teams we played against, and then we'd turn up and, you know, have a very mediocre season. Or even in more recent memory where we kind of beat PSG and Barca and, you know, all these teams in pre-season, and then the season was like, and of course there's no Community Shield for us this year, but that's not exactly been a great proof of concept for an Arsenal squad in recent years either. So
It's tough to judge on preseason, not only now but, you know, seasons before. As you said, it's a few games to try out a few different things, to see how players are doing, to get the team, you know, tuned up and you know, give the players a run out after a holiday or something like that. I don't see it as a big indicator. Although, I mean, during this preseason, we have seen all the same problems that we have been seeing over the last few years. That is not making me too optimistic. But, you know, I'm sure that Arteta and the board also see those problems. It's not probably only us. I mean, they can't be that blind.
Well, I mean, the evidence is fairly clear on that front. And it's the age-old problem, and we'll go more into this in a little bit, but it's the fact that there are people that fans want out, the manager wants out, I'm sure the board want out, but the problem is no one else wants to pay any money for them. And you can't just give everyone away on a free transfer, even for just meeting accountancy reasons, but also just from not being, you know, taken advantage of for years to come.
Yeah, definitely.
I suppose the positive, I mean, I know you didn't watch the Spurs game live, well, lucky you, because it was as if Mourinho hadn't really left, because Spurs were a bit foully, very good on the counter-attack, quite dull. And Arsenal were very good at progressing the ball between certain areas and then a bit toothless beyond that. But there's sort of two angles on that I want to discuss with you, which relates to the squad. But firstly, I just wanted to say that there might not be massive improvements, but what we have to say is that the new signings all provide something which wasn't there last year. You know, I mean, for a start, we actually have a reserve left back, so we're not going to have Granit Xhaka playing at left back for any length of time, hopefully.
Knock on wood.
We have a centre half who can both pass and run in the same nice set of feet. Yeah, exactly. Not just one or the other. Sadly, we've only got one fit one of those at the moment, but anyway. And we have a central midfielder who seems to have some vague idea of where to stand, but can also pass the ball forwards, which is also, you know, I mean, I think Lokonga needs to work on, as is so often with players from the continent, basically getting used to the tempo of the Premier League and playing at a high enough pace. But he seems to have a degree of tactical intelligence, a degree of ease and comfort, and looks kind of ready to contribute probably quicker than we thought he would.
I was following the match on Twitter and a few before as well, because I was unable to watch them live. And there was always lots of praise for Lokonga. And just what you said, that he looks ready to start, ready to fit in the first team, not just like a backup or have some weeks or even months to get used to the tempo and all of that. I mean, obviously he won't be as up to speed as those who played for a while in the Premier League, but still, I mean, it's a really, I didn't expect much from him, because, you know, he's in like a big name signing, as you would say, and he didn't cost much money and so, but at the moment he seems like a kind of signing that I would like us to make more in future, you know, someone like we used to do before in the Golden Wenger years, when the money was tight and all that, and he went out and found some gems around Europe and around the world that were pretty affordable and still really fit well in the plan for the team, and worked good with the players that we already have and with those that we maybe sign in the future.
I mean, it is one of those things we're looking at, sort of wondering, is it that he's unusually ready to contribute, or is it that we've got so used to watching a shit midfield whenever Thomas Partey's not playing that our standard is just a bit low? Because at the moment we're all sitting here feeling a vague sense of joy because he's not Mohamed Elneny. But that doesn't say a great deal.
Well, I mean, it doesn't, but is it wrong to think of that? I mean, we finished eighth last season and we really want to get better. So any improvement in the right direction, I think it's a good thing to see, to have. I really hope that he gets started in the first match as well.
Yes, yeah. I mean, certainly, I mean, it was obviously the game had gone sort of chaotic by then with all the subs, but even though Lokonga clearly tired in the second half, he did seem to just have a better idea of what to do than when Elneny came on. And you could see some of the other players getting a bit frustrated with Elneny's sort of inability to pass the ball forward. And it's just such a strange thing with Elneny, because it's not that he's technically terrible. I mean, he's no Fabregas or anything like that, but or Cazorla. But when he actually attempts to be a bit more progressive in his play, he can sometimes be quite effective in it. But he's just got this mindset which is so safe, so risk averse. Mm. Except sometimes when he's trying to beat people on the edge of his own box. But it doesn't seem to be... Yeah, for me, it's just one of those things where we know what we've got with Elneny now. So, you know, we know that he's a good guy to bring on and run around for a bit late on in a game. Yeah. You can fit him in with a specific tactical plan, which involves running around a bit, or you need someone who's going to basically sacrifice themselves for the team and basically do other people's dirty work for them to a degree. But other than that, there's not a lot there. You know, he's a Europa League level player at best.
Yeah, definitely.
And possibly not the latter stages of the Europa League level. But I thought Ben White was very impressive again. I mean, obviously he's got some rough edges to his game, but he has some recovery pace. His distribution is clearly better than some of his colleagues. But also there was one moment against Spurs which stood out, not because it was particularly brilliantly effective, but just there was a point where there were two, you know, he had the ball, got it probably from Leno, I think, and there were two Spurs players sort of closing him down, and he just ran between them and kept running until he got to sort of the halfway line, and eventually it broke down and whatever. But that it was like going, oh, that's something that no one really tries to do. I mean, David Luiz tried to do it occasionally, but you knew if he lost it, he couldn't get back, so you're always shitting. You know, since then it's been, I mean, you've got it from Thomas Vermaelen back in the day when he was a goal scoring threat from open play, and you got it from Kolo Touré. But other than that, it's not really been, you know, not really been a thing we've seen a lot in an Arsenal shirt. So that should certainly help in certain situations, and certainly in terms of progressing the ball and giving us a few more options.
I don't think that we discussed, but let me ask you, because I discussed it with Steven at length on several podcasts. Do you think he worth the money? 50, 52, what was it, the final price?
Well, there's three answers to that. Well, three elements influence the answer. The first is obviously his performance. Early signs are positive, but then let's not go overexcited. Early signs of Mustafi were positive. let us not forget that Mustafi's defensive record as an Arsenal player in the first half of his first season was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
until his mind broke, and that was. But on top of performance, it's also what happens with the European post-COVID transfer market in general. You know, mm-hmm. If the market recovers and then average prices start returning to what they were, say, 2 years ago, and he performs a decent level, then okay, that's fair enough. And also, it depends on what the impact of Brexit, homegrown rules, all that jingoistic bollocks, is going to be on that English player premium. It looks like we're probably going to be losing a homegrown player this week. We'll touch on that, and a lot of people are kind of very torn in their feelings about it. But the fact is Joe Willock probably departing after one great run of 14 games. And I'm, you know, I'm not quite a Joe Willock truther, but I'm, you know, more in favour of him than a lot of people. But the fact is he's never got a sniff of, you know, an England squad, obviously. And he's paying for half of Ben White. So yeah, again, true. That will also inform how good the Ben White deal is. It, you know, if we're selling a player for half that money, how well do they do? So there's kind of with all these things, you can't really judge it until straight away. It feels steep, but then, you know, with an English player, the price will be steep. And I've already seen enough to think that, not in every aspect of his game, but in certain aspects of our game, if we're playing a high line and progressive passing, he's our best central defender as things stand. You know, if Saliba ever comes back, and Gabriel, you know, there you've got a very strong central defensive unit of young guys who can all pass the ball, play a high line, and cope with a really modern way of playing. Whereas, you know, we will love Rob Holding, but he's not a halfway line centre-half, and never will be. And Pablo Marie is showing us that he also is not a half-line centre-half.
He seems hot and warm. I mean, he did have some really good matches over the pre-season, and then what I've read against Tottenham was not very good.
Well, I mean, the way that Tottenham played was a sort of template for something he was going to struggle with, which is they didn't really play with a normal front player. They played very counter-attacking, swift counters, long balls into the channels, out wide. And then all their front players were people who could run with the ball effectively. You know, he's the one defender in our team who would have been a lot happier if Harry Kane was playing. Because as a profile of opposition for him, it matches up a lot better for him because he's someone he could come short with, but Kane's not going to spin him and sprint past him at great speed because Kane's not particularly quick. You know, Marie's good in the air, decent size, decent reader of the game, but he's not going to win many foot races, particularly if they're not in a straight line, and he can't turn quickly enough. He's not quite Pascal Sagan in the, oh my God, don't let anyone run at him, but he's got that element of like, you know, he's statuesque, as they used to call it, which you can say how you feel about that.
Well, it's a similar situation as with Elneny. You know what you're getting, and you know that he shouldn't be the first choice, the first player to in the defensive pair, but as a backup, I think it's still a good option to have.
Yeah, and also like Elneny and a few others in the squad, he's if you excuse the pun, he's a holding option. He's someone that's there. You know that he can't really play the way that we want to play long term. You know, clearly what we're seeing from what Arteta wants to do isn't really going to suit him. But he was cheap. Decent wages, he's a competent centre half that can, you know, can pass to a decent level, is deep, good in the air. Even though he's slow as anything, he's more comfortable with a high line than other defenders of his profile. So, you know, okay, he's someone that is in the long line of Arsenal centre halves who aren't really good enough, but are fine for the moment. And so I've got no problems with Pat Murray, but I will have a problem if he's still getting regular game time 3-4 years from now, you know.
That's true. That's, do we have too many of players of that, you know, form?
You mean the placeholders?
Yeah.
Well, undoubtedly we do. I mean, don't you think so?
Well, yeah, in all areas, I'd say.
Yeah. Because you've got a lot of players who they're okay, you know, they should be able to help propel a team to a higher level than we have been playing in the last couple of years, but they're not players who are going to offer much at a Champions League level unless they are being slightly carried by other players around them. And also some of them are not young players either. So you know that they've got a limited shelf life. I mean, you can find one in most positions, you know. You got Willian, that worked well. But he's an ultimate placeholder footballer. You know, he's a player you get on a 3-year contract, hoping the first 2 years will be decent and knowing the third year is probably going to be a write-off. Holding and Marie, you know, nothing against them. They are what they are and they're fairly good at what they do. But what they do has its ceilings and its limitations. Elneny we've discussed. Sadly, our right fullbacks all seem to be of that category now, as Hector Bellerin is not the player he was. And it certainly has been, his weaknesses have been found out. I mean, actually, just on that, it's really weird. Like, it's not weird. He's lost a degree of the physical power he used to have and explosiveness. So now he doesn't really move like a footballer. I don't know if you feel this, but like the last couple of times I've seen him play, I've seen him on the plane and I'm thinking, you look a bit like a bloke who's there rather than part of the team. You know, you've got all these, particularly when you see some of the better players in the squad, you know, you've got Partey, you've got Ben White even alongside him, even to a degree, inconsistent people like Pepe, but certainly people like Smith or whatever. The way they move, the way they run, their sort of physical stature, even if they're not built, is just stronger. You know, Bellerin looks a bit like a boy out there, and of course he's not a boy anymore, and actually he looks more like a boy now than he did when he was more of a boy, which suggests that he still hasn't really fully recovered from that injury.
That's really, I mean, it has been now several years, right?
What is it, 2.5 years, something like that?
It's a really long recovery time. Obviously, everyone has different recovery time. It's tough to say that someone will recover as fast as the other and in the same way. But I mean, the decline is really, really sad. I've seen some tweets going around. Like there was some kind of a meme, you know, what would you say to the old self, or if you had a time machine or something, and there was a comment like telling Wenger to sell Bellerin to Barcelona when they were interested.
Well, yeah, or indeed Man City more recently, you know, but...
I mean, just imagine, because now, as you mentioned before, that we have players that we want to sell and no one is here to buy them, and Bellerin is definitely one of them, and... Just a few seasons ago, he was wanted by such massive, huge clubs around Europe. And we were like, no way. We can't sell him. He's one of the key players for the future. And now the decline is just really, it's sad to watch. I mean,
that's what happens with big injuries. I mean, Jesus, over the last 15 years, Arsenal fans have, well, more than 15 years, but have got super acquainted with that, you know, having great players with great promise, with very high market value. And, you know, quite a lot of them have been freak injuries or unfortunate injuries, and they're never quite the same since. And then you're kind of left, you either got some for peanuts or let them go walk out the door for free, or, you know, we don't need to reel off the list, but even for as great a career as he's had, even Aaron Ramsey never became the player that he would have become without that broken leg.
There was some danger, yeah.
Because he lost a little bit of pace and a little bit of strength, you know, in terms of the potential of what he could do. Because, you know, you miss over a year of development at that part of your career. You know, of course, some people can recover virtually almost fully, but some can't. And Bellerin's thing is that the weaknesses he's got are always there, but he was always quick enough to not have to worry about it too, and sort of dynamic enough in his running to not worry about it too much. But now he's both not got that physical potential, but also knows he hasn't, and is more worried and is tentative. And, you know, I mean, he's still capable of good moments, particularly in the final third going forward. He's another one who hasn't recovered fully mentally, I don't think. And then when you watch the YouTube thing he did about his recovery process or whatever, and you can kind of see why, really. I mean, he clearly really struggled with it at the time in a big way. And, you know, even after that, sort of made some revelations about basically going off the rails slightly. You know, when he was in the depth of his injury problems. I suppose the question mark, as it all comes at the moment, is what happens next? You know, we know what the areas of we need are. We know mostly what players the club wants to sell. And the question is can they get any of the people they want out of the door? And can they get people in who are good enough to make them feel comfortable with forcing someone out the door to get that squad space? You know, if you can pick up a Martin Odegaard, do you just let Klasnac piss off for free? You know, but yeah, because at the moment,
big decisions like that. Yeah, good thing that Edu is on the vacation and not having to think about that.
Well, I think there was a comment on social media not so long ago from his son, sort of saying that when Eddie goes on holiday, he spends.
I mean, that's just everything that's wrong with social media and football fans on social media. I mean, just I can't even imagine to be in that mindset to go and message a son of your board director, president, or whatever, in general, not just here, to ask him to sign this player. I mean, that's just, why, how?
Because people are stupid, firstly, but also the internet and its connectivity gives people a deluded sense of their potential impact. And also it gives carte blanche to expression of opinion without having to really deal with the consequences of that. And then we've seen that a lot with the racial abuse online, whatever. People are just used to the fact that they can basically sound off whatever they want and there's no
consequences for it.
So, you know, this is why it's really important that some people get, you know, particularly with the racial issue, but anything of that equivalence, get done for it, because it just, people need to be taught that just because you're not in person doesn't mean that it's meaningless. You know, everything has a potential impact, and you can't just act with a total lack of responsibility. And, you know, that's partly because the information age exploded far quickly than society could adjust to it. And so while it brought out the best of a lot of people, it also brought out the worst of a lot of people, because there was no, you know, most societies have very long-term constructed patterns of what acceptable behavior is, you know, are whatever differences there might be between Croatia and England in terms of manners or what's the right thing to do, would have been formed over centuries or millennia, and different influences will have formed that. And of course, around the world, most of there are similarities, but there are differences. But the online thing, particularly for a lot of people, you know, it's only really had proper global access to the internet for 20 years. So society is scrabbling around trying to work out what is acceptable, and the powers that be tend to be, frankly, for the most part, people who, basically their opinions were formed pre the information age, so they don't have the ability to quickly grasp what the right solutions are. I mean, some of them do, some of them are incredibly intelligent people, but it needs some of the younger generation to take a lead in shaping what the etiquette is and stuff as well, because they can they're just the instinctual familiarity they have with it probably allows them to do so in a way that's less reactionary or more in keeping with also the freedoms that we want to keep as well. So it's a challenge, but it starts, unfortunately, with some butt kicking. And speaking of butt kicking,
it's certainly more pleasant to consider kicking butts that aren't forest-like, like thickets or overgrown dense jungles. And of course, you can be helped with that with taming your pubes and any other bodily hair with our friends from Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming, and also useful in other parts. Their third-generation performance package includes the flagship Lawnmower 3.0. So fellas, do right by your balls and join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code DCPOD20. That's DCPOD20. And of course, taking care of yourself is more important than ever now that you can actually go out and, you know, interact with other human beings for the first time in quite a long time, such as at football matches. Who would have thought it? And because the world is starting to open, the Performance Package 3.0 from Manscaped is here to help you, that's you, get ready. Inside their package, you'll find the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose and hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, plus two free gifts, the Performance Boxer Briefs and the Shed Travel Bag. So essentially this package, the perfect package, is the perfect package for your package. Or something like that. Anyway, the Lawnmower 3.0 has a third generation trimmer featuring a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe TM technology. It has a 7,000 RPM motor, an LED spotlight for more precise shaving, and did I mention it's also waterproof? Which means you can shave in the shower, or theoretically in a swimming pool, but that'd be horrible, or maybe even in the sea if you're deeply weird. Anyway, less mess to clean up with any of those options. It also comes with the Weed Whacker to chop your worst weeds up top in both your nose and your ear. If you've got a weedy ear, this is the tool for you. It's also waterproof and has a 9,000 RPM motor powered 360-degree rotary dual blade system, which sounds terribly impressive. It also provides proprietary skin-safe TM technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags and tugs in those delicate holes. And of course, after your trimming, you, particularly down below, you can look after yourself a bit more with liquid formulations such as the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and Crop Reviver Ball Toner, and they are key to feeling absolutely spiffing. Manscaped also threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and Shed Travel Bag. Anyway.
Just before we get on to Joe Willock, I wanted to ask you, what for you, in what order priority are our top three positional needs as of today?
Well, I would still like a midfielder, especially since Joe Willock is definitely off. Like, you know, the goal scoring midfielder, it's a dream. We haven't had that in a while. And Willock looked like someone who could be close to there. I mean, he looked like one of those playing for Newcastle. Not sure if he would deliver the same for Arsenal, obviously. Hard to tell, but that's definitely something I would like to see. And because, you know, Aubameyang obviously didn't look that good in the last few matches. He wasn't playing in his best position, obviously. And we all know Lacazette and his positives and negatives, and Eddie Nketiah as well, who is also still maybe on the going out on the door. Now I'm completely confused myself. Maybe being sold as well. So maybe a striker would be an option as well. And I'm really still not sold on the whole Ramsdale thing. And I definitely think that he's definitely not worth the money. Unlike Ben White, which I was convinced that he might be worth the money. A goalkeeping position is definitely something that would be good to have, like a decent backup, not 30 plus million worth backup, but maybe Onana. Is it Onana? Yeah.
Who I suspect.
Someone like that, because I mean, as many have said, Bernd Leno got some freaky injury. Like, we all know that Arsenal players are very open for those, and often get those. So if he gets injured, what do we have?
Do you don't think that that Runison will rise to the challenge?
I mean, not that optimistic, really. You can't say that you are that optimistic, even you.
No. I would have a reserve goalkeeper of some quality, someone who's good enough to put a bit of pressure on Leno, would be our second priority for me. I think the first priority is a midfielder who can preferably play both 8 and 10. Has some goal threat, but also can beat a man and play perceptive passes. And third priority, is it striker or is it right back? That for me depends partly on what happens the first priority of the midfielder. You know, if you get a midfielder who's able to create more space for those around them and play perceptive passes, then we might be all right with the striking options we've got. But if we can't really get someone of excellent quality in that area, then we do need something different up front, because all our striking options have similar weaknesses, shall we say.
Yeah, but I agree with you that the key is definitely the midfielder, because you have to have someone to give the ball forward, the good ball, not just, you know, playing around, just, you know, passing around and not sure what to do with it and all of that. And if we get a midfielder like that, then I think that even those strikers that might have been struggling now in preseason and in the last season as well might start to, you know, work better, perhaps.
Yeah, and there's also a thing of, if you've got the midfield sewn up, then you can try and get a right back that offers more in the attacking sense as well to augment things for the strikers. And ultimately, I think that's probably the most likely outcome, because I don't see us buying a striker unless Nketiah or Lacazette leave. Nketiah's injured, and not a major injury, but he's injured and appears to be running down his contract. And Lacazette's on 180 grand a week. and he's also running down his contract.
Very comfortable.
I mean, it is that thing, you know, people do obviously quite rightly lose their shit about the Willian transfer, but we're still basically unpicking the mess of and the mess of illogical transfer decisions from the pre-Arteta period of just, well, let's buy players. How are they supposed to fit together? It doesn't matter. Good. So they will fit together. It doesn't quite work like that. And one of the things that's really obvious, again, as it was last season, as it's been in this preseason, is one thing that we have with the makeup of players we got is a very good range of players who can put in balls from wide areas from a range of different positions around the pitch, but no one in the attacking, you know, penalty area who's going to win more than a very small amount of headers. You know, obviously Aubameyang has got athletic potential, but heading the ball is something he's very erratic at, and it's never really been his game. Lacazette fights and battles and is technically quite a good header of the ball, but is small, and there's no getting away from that. You know, I'm not an athlete, but I could probably beat him in the air quite a lot of the time. And of course, Nketiah is even less physically dominating than Lacazette in that respect. And there's just been so many times when we've been crying out for a player, whether it be on the starting or on the bench, who can just provide that different option. They don't have to be kind of, we're not looking for a Giroud-like target man, but we just need someone who can challenge for the ball from delivered from wide areas without basically thinking, at the moment we're only going to score a goal with a header if a defender's nowhere near it when it's a ball crossed into the box for our attackers to attack.
Or, what about Martinelli?
Well, Martinelli's got a bit of that, but again, that's, he's more of a player that is technically good with his head and with good movement, but he's not going to, if you know, so often our strikers or even coming in from the left find themselves outnumbered. And you need, I just think we need someone in the squad who can, unless we can get a much better midfield and better players elsewhere, we need, who are going to open teams up more, we need someone in the squad that can just legitimately challenge for the ball in the air. Obviously, I'd prefer the brilliant midfield that doesn't need that, but I think that's going to be harder to achieve than getting a striker who can win the odd header.
What an easy task.
So I have to ask you, with that in mind, now it looks like Lukaku is going to Chelsea and therefore Inter will not be selling Lautaro Martinez, which always struck me as being a slightly odd rumour anyway. Where do you stand on Tammy Abraham?
I was discussing this with Steven as well. And I mean, he's so good with words sometimes, and he managed to convince me in some... on some players that I'm not really too keen. I was like, Tammy Abraham, another, is a Chelsea reject. We didn't have really much luck with those. But I mean, when you look at him, besides everything that's happened, he's a young player, he's homegrown player, he's a striker that scores goals. And that's what you want from the striker.
Ideally.
I mean, he's not flashy. He's not, you know, easy on the eyes and the magician with the ball and all of that that we have seen in the past with Henry and even Van Persie and all of that. But, I mean, if we do sign him and he goes there and, you know, just is in the right place at the right time and scores goals, you can't say much against that.
Yeah, I mean, he's a player, again, it comes down to the price. At 40 million, that's too steep for me because I don't think he'll ever be a first-choice striker for the Arsenal. And at 40 million, you want to be buying a player that at least has a good chance of being the first choice if you're spending that kind of money. If we're talking 20 million, I'd buy him in a heartbeat because I think he, as you say, his goal-scoring record is pretty good. He has a certain physicality. He's tall and he's decent in the air, not as good in the air as someone of his size. And he's young. He's got a little bit of the Yaya Sanogo about him. but for me, he's a player that has the potential to be sort of the less injured Danny Welbeck, which was a signing that if Welbeck hadn't had the injuries he had, it would have been a good signing and never our first choice centre forward. Yeah. And that's kind of where I am with Tammy Abraham. I think, you know, and obviously he's a childhood gooner as well, so that always helps.
Another placeholder, huh, Matthew?
Yeah, but a placeholder that has the potential to be a placeholder for quite a long time as opposed to a placeholder for a short time. Because the thing is, what I like about Tammy Abraham is he's capable of contributing something in a variety of different systems and approaches. So he's not the cleanest striker in the world. He can miss chances. He's quite frustrating to watch in some ways, but he's a bit of a Swiss Army knife in that if you're defending deep, you need someone to hold the ball up. He can do that. He's quick enough that he can run in behind. He's comfortable going into wide areas, even though he's not really going to beat lots of players. He doesn't mind coming short and scrapping for it there as well. So he's just like, doesn't do anything to an elite level, but he's good enough all round to be someone I think would be useful. But obviously, if we're looking for a new first choice striker, which who knows if we are, then you need to go somewhere a little bit more ambitious in terms of quality of finishing.
More expensive, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're also being linked with Vlahovic out of. Is that his name? Vlahovic? Out of Fiorentina? Have I pronounced that right? Vlahovic. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's Dusan Vlahovic. Yeah. Out of Fiorentina, who I've seen a fair bit of simply because I've got a soft spot for Fiorentina, having very briefly lived in Florence. He's an interesting player. He's someone that I used to buy in Football Manager when he was about 17 before he became actually any good. And he went and didn't really do very much for a couple of years. And then just the last season and a half has really kind of kicked on. And he's big, strong, reasonably quick. Again, not the tidiest finisher in the world. Like, he scores quite a lot of goals, but a lot of them are kind of, he's not someone that picks the corners, if you know what I mean. But both us and Spurs have been linked with him, obviously Spurs because that Harry Kane money is going to have to go somewhere, and us because he presents a profile of striker that is a bit different to what we've got. The problem is Fiorentina, having sold Chiesa to Juventus, don't need the money this summer. So if you're buying him, you're spending 50 million quid on a guy that's had a season and a half of real kind of regular top flight football. Now, he scored a fair amount. His goal scoring record at that time is good, but he's also a penalty taker for Fiorentina. And Fiorentina have been very reliant on him. But on the flip side, you have to say, well, he scored a lot of goals in a Fiorentina team, which has been the worst Fiorentina team in the last 30 years, probably, since they got relegated. Because they nearly got relegated again last year, and he still scored like 20 goals or whatever in Serie A. So, which is, as we know, is not to be sniffed at. Lautaro Martinez, again, I don't really see that happening. You'd be looking at Pepe money there at least. And also, he's a player that for me is best in the proximity to another striker. I don't think we're going to have a midfielder good enough anytime soon to work with that kind of centre forward being a lone centre forward. You know, a bit like the Aguero for Man City thing. You know, it worked with Man City, but would it have worked Aguero playing a team that didn't have that level of midfield dominance?
That sentence that you just said, we don't have a midfield good enough for that and that. It's just like, I instantly remember, you know the midfield that was here when I started.
don't do it to yourself.
Oh my God. I mean, this, what were they? The Spice Boys, Space Boys.
Well, that was the Liverpool Spice Boys.
I mean, the Fabregas, Rosicki, Hleb, Flamini were there. Yeah. That was like a squad. And they were hanging out all the time. And it was just, you know.
Yeah. But, I mean, you have to say that was a brilliant collection of players, a lot of whom were underrated, all somewhere near their absolute peaks. But I don't think that midfield would work in the Premier League today, even though I'd kill to have some of those players.
Times change. That's
well, normal. I mean, you know, we've all seen there's a lot more three-man midfield, central midfield. There's a lot more physicality involved in central areas. There's a lot more really tactical clogging up of that area of the pitch. I mean, it was a very well-balanced midfield because of the divergence of their skill sets and because they were all capable of... They all had like a superpower, but they were all capable of doing more than just that superpower. I mean, even Flamini, who when he returned to us, just sort of did a lot of pointing and shouting. But when he was a younger player, he could get around the pitch better and was a good ball winner and a good foil because he knew exactly what his role was, and so get the ball and give it as quickly as possible to Cesc or Rosicki or Hleb. But yeah, I don't really know short of more better players, what the solution is really in terms of fixing our midfield. But it isn't just the midfield, of course. It's, you know, a midfield functions as well as those around it. Let it, you know, our problems at fullback in recent years have been a big, massive part of it. Our having defensive line that is scared shitless of being caught, so therefore defends too deep. Having strikers who Giroud could fight for possession, was good in the air, but couldn't run. Or we've got strikers who can run and can't fully fight for possession and aren't good in the air. Or you've got Lacazette, who tries to do a bit of everything, but coincidentally ends up trying to play three different positions at once and isn't quite good enough at any of them to justify being a first-choice player. I mean, I think it is becoming clear that striker is going to be a huge priority for us, not just because it isn't quite working, but also because you look at the age profiles of our strike force apart from Balogun and Nketiah, and they really haven't proven anything yet. So, but it all just depends, I suppose, on what business can be done. I mean, just on Joe Willock, what's your feelings beyond, oh no, it's a goal scoring midfielder and we're selling.
Well, I think the money is really good. I'm kind of getting this similar feeling to like I did when we sold Iwobi to Everton, because I had a soft spot for him, and you know, he was at the club for such a long time and a big fan and all of that, and he had his good sides and his bad sides. Obviously he had a bit more game time in the first team than Joe Willock had so far, but you know, it's kind of a similar situation for me personally when you see a player like that, more from like sentimental side, to say it like that, than from the playing side, because Joe Willock for what was the last 25 or so million, that was the rumor. I think that's a really good deal for someone, as you said, had a good run for 14 or so games, when you know, being blunt and all of that. But yeah, I don't mind this transfer. I'm not sure if he would perform as well for us as he did for Newcastle. He obviously really liked it and worked well with the team and all of that. It's hard to see if it would work for us, and if Arteta would even play him, if he would be the first choice or a backup constantly as he was in seasons before when he was not on loan. So I think it would be stupid not to go for it and to cash in, as to put it that way.
I mean, for me, I find myself very torn in it, because I feel very frustrated that we haven't tried to take advantage of the fact he's had this great run of form and now believes in himself at this level. That for me is a big frustration, simply because when a player makes that mental and physical shift, it then changes what their ceiling is. You know, you compare it to someone like Reece Nelson, who is technically very tidy, lacks like adult man power to his game, and also lacks conviction, and you know, seems to play within himself so much, which is so frustrating for a player that was so dominant at younger levels and is technically very good. Whereas Willock found a belief in himself. I mean, he's always been a bit more overtly confident, but he found a sort of real level of belief that made him, as I say, play with greater conviction. But the flip side of the coin is that in this market, it's decent money. And was he ever going to be first choice in this team? Probably not, unless he kicked on to the same level again. And essentially, you know, once players get to a certain age, they count against senior squad caps, and you've got to make a decision. And we've got too many players, and Willock wouldn't be my first choice to sell, but I don't see anyone putting in bids for any other guys we want to sell.
I'm just afraid and worried that it's not really, it might turn out like the Emi Martinez situation.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it doesn't go full fucking Serge Gnabry, I'll settle for that. But yeah, I mean, I think that Joe Willock will do very well for Newcastle, and when they'll get an expensive move to a bigger club, so we better be putting a sell-on clause in.
Yeah,
I expect him to score against us at some time in the next couple of seasons, because he has a skill set that we struggle to defend against. So for me,
you would suggest putting him in the fantasy team.
Well, maybe, yeah. Maybe. the thing is, ultimately, his problem at Arsenal is that at Arsenal, and if you're a young player and you're not ready by the time, and you're not ready by the time you're 21, then you're kind of stuffed. Unless you're like Maitland-Niles and can play 10 different positions, you know, because then it becomes the only time you're going to get the game time you need is if the manager puts you in, and it's a risk, and they can't put you in if you're not quite ready. But then you're not going to get the games otherwise at a big club because you're scrapping for every point. And with the stupid limitations on squad numbers, being the amount of players, which I understand why they're there, because they're to prevent hoarding of players and what have you. But it, frankly, it hasn't stopped that happening. It just means that Chelsea send 300 players on loan every summer. But it's sort of like the club doesn't really have a choice. If they could get some of the other players they wanted out the door, they'd keep him because he would probably be very valuable off the bench option. And it's a player that clearly has in there the potential to be a really top player of a certain type, but it's unlikely that he'll be able to do that at Arsenal unless a lot of things happen in his favour in a relatively short space of time. I mean, the other reason I'm disappointed he's going is because I think we don't have any, as you said, there's no one really else that's got his skill set in the squad, and I'd much rather have your bench options made of homegrown players than mediocrity from elsewhere. But you know,
that's a good point. Yeah,
we've got so many players that no one wants to buy. You know, hands up, who'd forgotten that Lucas Torreira even was still an Arsenal player? Not even out in the fucking country yet.
Where is he? He's lost somewhere.
He's in Madrid waiting for his COVID quarantine time to be over. But we've got Kolasinac. Yeah. You've got these players that they want to leave. We want them to leave. But they ain't going anywhere because the European transfer market is buggered. And unfortunately, as we've discovered, you know, it's paying a lot of money for Ben White. The only place you're selling players for money at the moment, unless they're absolute world beaters, is in the Premier League. And Premier League clubs have got enough money. They're not going to buy your shit. They're going to buy players that are, you know, either at a certain level or are promising. And if they're homegrown, that makes them more interesting for them because of obviously the rules. So it is a lot easier to sell Joe Willock, even though he's proven very little. Even if he hadn't had the run of games he'd had at Newcastle, he still would have probably got 15 million quid for him this summer if he wanted to sell him. Mm-hmm. Of his inherent potential and the fact he's homegrown and the fact that the primary market for him is going to be Premier League clubs. But you could have if Joe Willock was not English and didn't want to play in England, you wouldn't be able to sell him this summer.
No way.
So it's just the reality of the situation, which sucks ass because it means we're still stuck with the same fucking hangers on that we've been stuck with. I'm waiting for the time that Lucas Torreira gets wheeled out in a League Cup match.
Yeah, and I think those players that you just listed and a few maybe others are much bigger issue than Xhaka getting a new contract and staying here.
Yeah.
Well, they don't get talked about nearly as much as Xhaka.
And once again, Queen of the Links, that was the next question I was going to ask you is... Do you feel not so much about him staying, because I think we all think that given the range of options available to us, that's probably a good thing, but about the contract extension?
Well, you know, I like Xhaka from always.
Bit of Balkan solidarity.
Yeah, I have to rep my own guys. I mean, I didn't like the term protecting the asset or what was it, because I don't think that he's, you know, as young as some other players are that would fit that description. But I mean, I was in favor of him staying. I don't mind that. I would be okay if he has gone. And I think that giving him some contract extension might be better for us long term because just because of the situation that so many players are running down the contract now and going out for free. This way we might still get, you know, some money, if not all. I'm not too happy with the length of the contract extension that was rumored.
I was like alluding to,
Yeah, that's a bit, you know, too much. Although, I mean, I don't expect him to stay that long. He maybe even next summer off or something like that. But still, generally okay, not too happy with the length. But otherwise, I think it's fine. And no matter what everyone thinks about Xhaka and all the his negative sides that we all know everything about and have discussed at length since we signed him, basically, he's still really, really, really important for this team and for Arteta, and has been important for the previous two managers as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not even that worried about the length of contract because I mean, ideally, of course, we want to hope that in 2-3 years' time we have a midfield that's sufficient to make him expendable, because that means we'll have a better midfield. Mm-hmm. But I don't see him as a player that getting into his early 30s is going to particularly drop off his game, because it's not as if the position or his style of play are particularly reliant on athleticism. If anything. You know, the increased experience and intelligence that should come with getting a bit older would actually probably help him. I do think it has done. I do think that what he still has his odd Balkan moment, as I refer to it, where he goes a bit. But I do think that he has played with greater maturity in the last year for the most part, and a greater tactical intelligence. And he's clearly a super important character for the club, because like everyone else won't say boo to the goose, and he's the one that's bawling people out and bollocking people on the pitch and keeping that sort of sense of, you know, we all think that he's not really good enough for where we aspire to be, but he's still one of the players that's doing most to try and uphold certain types of standards at the club, even if some of them aren't actually to do with the playing side. And, you know, David Luiz has left in the summer, big character, big influence. You got our captain's great when things are going well, but when, you know, things aren't going well, Aubameyang sort of disappears a bit and looks also. Yeah. He's not someone to rally the troops, it seems. And so there's also...
Xhaka is the opposite, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not quite in the Aaron Ramsey way, because but he doesn't hide very often, Granit Xhaka, no matter how shit things are going. I mean, that was a point where... towards the end under Emery, and at a point before we changed formation last season, where I was worried about him because I thought he was done, because he was starting to hide a little bit. And that's sort of like not when a player who sort of normally has the sort of desire to be a dominant personality starts putting themselves in positions where they can't really receive the ball, then you're like, okay, shit's hit the fan here. But then, you know, as soon as the team made its tactical change, Smith Rowe came in, then he perked up again and was, you know, heavily involved in every game. So yeah, I'm happy enough to see him staying. As you say, the extension's a little long, but I'm not as worried about that really. Because also I think his physical profile and tactical intelligence means that even if he gets surpassed in terms of not being, you know, first choice or even likely first choice player, I think he'd still be useful to us. And also I think he's the kind of personality that if he would find himself on the bench more often than not, he's not going to sit around and pick up the rest of his contract. He's going to be off and leading something somewhere else. You know, he's that personality. He wants to stamp himself, sometimes in the worst way, but stamp himself on the game and occasionally other people's ankles. But, you know, he's not one of those players that I think, yeah, he's just after the payday and the retirement home.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't particularly worry me in that respect. So just very quickly as we finish up, opening day of the season, away at Brentford, newly promoted. Thoughts?
Friday night. Friday night match. I remember three or four seasons ago when we played opening match on Friday night against Liverpool. I think it was 4-3 or something like that. It was a crazy match.
And I can't remember that one now. I remember the one when we beat Leicester opening day of the season. Lacazette got his first goal.
Yeah, I mean, it's always tricky against the newly promoted side because I personally didn't watch the championship and don't know much about the Brentford team and all of that. But I do expect a better performance than in preseason. I expect a similar team again, like against Tottenham.
Mm.
I think that worked really, really well. And I expect a win. Nice start for the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is going to be a tough game. I've watched a lot of Brentford, partly. I mean, they're kind of my other English team. And I know a lot of Brentford fans, and occasionally I go and watch them. Very well coached. One thing you'd say about Brentford watching them is all the players know what their job is. Like, mm. and they're all comfortable with what their job is. You know, so that you don't get people trying to do things that aren't their job, if you know what I mean, unless it's like emergency stations. And so because of that, they play with an assurance and a kind of, not really fluidity, but like they know what they're doing. So there's not the overthinking. There's not an uncertainty. There's quite a lot of certainty to the way they play. But equally, this is a step up for them. It's going to be the first time they played in the top flight for donkey's years. It's going to be absolutely rocking at their new ground. You know, one of the first times fans are going to be in it as well. So it's going to be a really big emotional occasion. And even though they're very well coached, I think the emotion of that occasion might make it difficult for them to retain the level of discipline that they'll need to beat us. And I think that even though we're not any great shakes at the moment and we'll be missing a couple of important players, I do think that we'll have a couple of players that are just a bit too good in terms of either their movement or their kind of ability to, you know, it's just a step up. So I think we'll win very narrowly. I think it'll be 2-1, my favourite scoreline. but also, you know, I think Brentford will cause us a lot of problems. Because, as I say, the simplicity and the clarity to the way they play, but I think we'll also cause them a lot of problems. Because this is one of the things that's been, you know, I was reading about today, is that everyone thinks that we don't create chances. And we don't really create chances, but we create a lot of situations that should be chances. It's just that it isn't quite clicking, or that our front players aren't quite doing enough, or the final ball's not quite good enough. And of course, against teams that aren't quite at the same level, you get a lot. There's a lot more forgiving for that. And while I think Brentford have a very good squad, you know, for a championship team coming up, nearly all of their players haven't played at this level before. So it'll be an incredible learning curve for them. And I do think that if as long as we approach the game with the right attitude, we'll be all right.
Nice summation. Hopefully Arteta has them pumped up.
Yeah, well, it's just kind of, you know, just focused, confident, assertive. Don't take any shit. Yes, that's it for us this week. Not a lot else to say except Or, hopefully we'll enjoy a good victory. Do remember, of course, that as ever, you get 20% off and free shipping for all your manscaped.com materials, for all your razors and balms, etc. The code is DCPOD20, DCPOD20. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code DCPOD20 at manscaped.com. Achieve pubic glory this year, dear God, with Manscaped. Yeah, basically, it should be a time of excitement. It's the start of a season, not just if
new
you're...
New hope, always new hope.
And not just if you're all trim in various different parts of your body. It should be exciting regardless. And basically, even if we are worried and we're still waiting on new transfers and we might not be entirely convinced, let's try and be optimistic and enjoy it, because at least this year there'll be fans back in the stadium. And that's something which needs to be celebrated in and of itself. And, yeah. You know, realistically, it can't be much worse than last year, can it?
Hopefully.
Right. Well, that's it from me. And so thank you, Anita, as always, for coming and talking to us.
Nice to chat about everything.
everything. And thank you, listeners, if you got this far. Hopefully you've got something out of it, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon. Have a great week, everyone. Cheerio.
Bye.